is 73 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Rain is in the forecast for later today. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielago, and you are tuned in to Taking Action. I want to welcome my guest for this afternoon. I am joined by Amy Shepherd. She is the press liaison with Extinction Rebellion, D.C., also joined by Naomi Cohen-Shield, who is the campaign manager, the DC campaign manager for the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. We're going to talk a little bit about your campaign, or a lot of it. Actually, we've got a whole hour to talk about it, about the campaign that you all work on together with a bunch of other people. But if you could talk to us a little bit about what is Extinction Rebellion DC and some of the work that you all engage in together?
Definitely. So we are the DC chapter of Extinction Rebellion, a decentralized international and nonpartisan movement using nonviolent direct action and civil disobedience to persuade governments to act justly on the climate and ecological emergency. And we have four demands at the core of what we do. The first is tell the truth about the reality of the climate emergency. Second is act now, that we have to take immediate action on the climate crisis. The third is beyond politics, and that means we don't align with a particular political party, but rather reorient to our collective power as a community. And the fourth is just transition, that we have to go beyond just talking about reducing greenhouse gas emissions and really prioritizing those who are most marginalized in our society and impacted by the climate crisis. This includes Black, Indigenous, and people of color, LGBTQIA+ communities, and low-income communities, and allowing them to lead this movement to the new system that we need. And I really want to emphasize within these demands is a core belief that our current system, including our political system, economic, military, collective punishment, social systems, they're not set up for people like you and me. They are, or other working class people. Our political system and all these other systems are really about enriching a wealthy few while the rest of us struggle to meet our basic needs. And we see this in our politicians answering to corporate lobbyists or other corporations, like our own corporate gas utility, Washington Gas. We also see this in our military system going into countries to secure access to resources like fossil fuels, or sending the funds to countries to enact genocidal campaigns to, again, access resources that enrich a wealthy few. So I say all this just because I want to share that while we're focused on specific campaign goals, XRDC is also about ensuring we're building community and practicing ways of being and organizing that embody the regenerative system that we are co-creating. And right now, this energy is focused on our End Methane Electrify DC campaign. So Washington Gas, DC's corporate gas utility provider, wants to spend 12 $1 billion of ratepayer money to replace all the methane gas pipes in DC, an effort they call Project Pikes. And we, in our campaign, are focused on stopping Project Pikes because we know methane gas deeply harms DC residents, and Project Pipes would lock DC into fossil fuel pollution for decades to come. And we are working towards this goal with, alongside many other fantastic local organizations, including the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. And I'll let Naomi speak a little bit more about that.
Yeah, thank you, Abby. Yeah, Naomi, how come you all are working along with XLRDC?
Yeah, we're happy to be part of this kind of bigger movement in DC that is working to end the reliance on methane, electrify DC, and help protect our community against the impact of the climate crisis. So the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, we are a grassroots climate nonprofit. We work in DC. We also work in Maryland, Virginia, and at the federal level, with a focus on a commitment to climate justice and working towards climate justice by advancing and supporting progressive policy approaches and helping build and help resource grassroots movements to support those policies. And so in DC, so much of where our emissions, like driving the climate crisis, are related to, and the impacts from it are related to the fossil fuel system, the methane system that we use to heat our home and power a lot of our buildings. And so there's this really great group of organizations that have come together over the past several years, partially under kind of the umbrella of the Beyond Gas DC Coalition. And a lot of that energy is fueling the Stop Project Pipes campaign that we'll talk more about, which sees a better future for all DC residents that doesn't include gas. And I know we're going to get a little bit more into why that is.
Yeah, so we'll stop there. Yeah, if you alluded to Abby, Project Pipes, and wow, the price tag to that seems really large, especially just to put it in context of, you know, this coming budget season. We are in the need of funds to fund some of the basic resources, safety net resources that DC residents need. But then there's all, you know, these big lobbies that also want, these big dollars. Talk to us a little bit more about what Project Pipes is and some of its goals and why it's important.
Sure. So as I said before, Project Pipes is this effort by Washington Gas to replace all the public methane gas infrastructure throughout the city of DC. And it started in 2014, and we are currently at the end-ish of the second phase of the project. And phase three is currently before the Public Service Commission of DC for approval. And if this project continues to be approved, it would go into the 2040s, and BC has very specific climate goals about being net zero by 2045. And so Project Pipes is in direct opposition to these climate goals that were passed by the DC Council and Mayor Bowser. And as you mentioned, I want to kind of hone in on that price tag because it is really large and it's shouldered by ratepayers. So Washington Gas's Project Pipes is really driving an affordability crisis throughout the district. There are many people throughout BC who are already struggling to afford their energy bills or have to make really tough decisions about whether they pay to heat their homes or they pay to food on the table or access certain healthcare. And Project Pipes is only going to make this worse. And as wealthier households electrify their homes, then this cost is going to be shouldered by low-income communities who are the ones trying to make these really difficult decisions and struggling to afford their bills. And so that's why things like today's, the council is voting on something called the Healthy Homes Act, and that would prioritize low-income communities and giving them funds to be able to electrify their homes. And so it's efforts like that we also need in tandem to stopping Project Pipe so we can begin this transition. And I also want to name kind of the harms of methane gas, like beyond just the cost of it. Methane is also a really dangerous substance in a couple of ways. And first is that it harms our health. Inside of our homes, when methane gas, which is so-called natural gas, or at least that's what the gas industry likes to call it, when it's burned inside of our homes, it releases a cocktail of poisonous air pollutants, such as nitrogen oxides and benzene, that can lead to cancer, respiratory disease, cardiovascular problems, and premature death. And outside of our homes, methane gas appliances drive poor outdoor air quality as well. And methane is a major component of smog, which is linked to over 1 million premature deaths every year. And we know in DC, our air quality keeps worsening because of fossil fuel pollution and the impacts of the climate crisis that we're already seeing. And the second part of what makes methane so dangerous is that it's an explosive substance. You and listeners probably remember the gas explosion that happened in Southeast DC back in January of this year that demolished buildings and nearly killed dozens of kids, and thankfully they are safe. But that's the kind of risk that residents are living under as long as methane gas runs through our streets. There are thousands of gas leaks in DC, over 70% of which are at hazardous levels, and that means that they could explode at any moment, especially when they're in enclosed space. And Project Pipes has not adequately reduced these leaks or addressed them. So it's not making us any safer. And Project Pipes only addresses public pipe replacement, and that means the pipes in our streets. It does nothing for the pipes in our homes. So there can still be gas leaks inside of our homes. And when gas is enclosed in buildings, that's when there's a much, much, much greater risk of explosion. So Project Pipes is having no impact on whether we have a gas leak and a gas explosion inside of our homes.
And if I could jump in and just go back to what Abby was talking so well about the, like the cost, the extraordinary cost of Project Pipes, this $12 billion all shouldered by ratepayers. I think it's also really important to note that that cost is not necessary. Washington Gas, as DC's gas utility, is already required to maintain its pipe system to safe levels and to fix leaks and to replace pipes when it's absolutely necessary. This program is an attempt by them to charge ratepayers to be able to make a profit. This is how the utilities make profits. It's by investing in capital infrastructure. And they're able to get a really high rate of return on the pipes that they're putting in the ground. That's like almost 10%, I believe, rate of return, which is what drives the cost up. And so all of this is not necessary. They're required to maintain the safety of this pipe system anyway, but they're claiming that what they're doing here with Project Pipes is about safety when it's really just about money and about, you know, boosting their shareholders' profits. And like you mentioned, you know, this is absolutely horrific when DC is in a budget crisis and so many people are going without and vital programs are being cut, and yet ratepayer money is being siphoned off for shareholder profit.
Yeah, thank you. As you all were talking, I popped up on the Washington Gas website, and you know, they make it seem like it's this altruistic effort and hey, we're doing it for you, and you know, the prices may go down. I don't know if that's true, but you know, of course they are going to paint this narrative that, you know, it's a good thing, but I think we should not lose sight that this is not, you know, some program. Washington Gas is a private entity that makes money. That's their goal at the end of the day, is to make money just like any other capitalist. So You know, we should be very careful about buying into these narratives because ultimately it serves them, not the community.
Exactly. And widespread electrification, which is, you know, happening across DC and happening across the country and the world because it's cheaper and it's healthier and it's better for the climate, that poses an existential crisis to the gas business. And so they're going to hang on for dear life. And to me, at least, that does not make them a trustworthy source of information.
That's right. And thank you for flagging, I think Abby brought it up, the inequitable piece of all of this is that, yeah, there are many people in DC that can, we're a very rich city, and there are a lot of people who can afford to, you know, go electric and will electrify, right? And, but there are certainly a lot of also very low income people in the district that will not be able to do that and will, as you mentioned, will, you know, be the ones that are actually paying these costs. So I think we should be very mindful of that as well. And thank you for making that point. Related to the budget, I know you all just engaged in some budget activities, as many of us are. Could you talk to us a little bit about, I know you guys had an action recently, but in general, you know, what are you calling on the, well, I guess now it's in the council's lap, you know, what are the, your budget ask and activities that you have been engaging in?
Yeah, so at Extinction Rebellion DC, we had some good timing with budget season, and also we, as an extension of our End Methane Electrify DC campaign, we brought two demands to the mayor in the beginning of April. And the first of those was demanding that the mayor make a public statement that DC must phase out methane gas in order to meet its goals to combat the climate crisis, as outlined in the Carbon Free DC plan, and that Washington Gas's plans to replace all of DC's methane gas infrastructure through Project Pipes will make those goals impossible to meet. And the second demand is committing to immediately begin working on aligning the agencies and the mayor's administration on supporting a managed just transition off methane gas that prioritizes DC's most marginalized people and ends the city's reliance on gas by 2032. And these demands, while they're delivered in the midst of budget season and are certainly very relevant to the budget, they really came out of a recognition that Mayor Bowser talks good on climate when it suits her. She will fly halfway across the world to Dubai to tout DC's climate goals like she did at the end of last November and tout the release of an actually watered down carbon-free DC plan. So what we see is that Mayor Bowser has very little tangible, strong action to back up her rhetoric on climate. So these demands are really meant to call the mayor in. She has a massive opportunity to step up and be a true climate leader that DC needs. And these demands to speak clearly and truthfully about the need to transition off methane gas and prioritize this just transition, like you named, about ensuring low-income communities are able to electrify alongside other households that can afford that. And those are just like the first steps she can take on this path. And so far, she has failed to meet those demands. On Earth Day, we were outside the Wilson Building, rolled out the red carpet for her, and she didn't show up. We even had a giant version of these demands ready for her to sign as an invitation to join us in like this livable fossil-free future that we're creating. We did get a response from the deputy mayor for operations and infrastructure. They replied to us via email to our initial letter with these demands. But almost all the points they made about different programs they have in the district to work on this transition, they're pretty much all undermined by Mayor Bowser's budget proposal. And I'll let Naomi kind of expand on like the specifics of what that means. But basically, it's Mayor Bowser has shown where her priorities lie. And right now that is not for the climate.
Yeah, I can add a few specifics there. Like Abby said, in the response that Extinction Rebellion DC got from the deputy mayor, they listed out all these programs. You know, look at what DC is doing to get off of gas and move towards a carbon-free future. And they named things like DC's Solar for All programs, which provides free solar installation for income-qualified households. They talked provides free home retrofits, full home retrofits to electric appliances for income qualified households. They talked about the district's building energy performance standards. I won't go too far into the weeds, but critical
I think Naomi may be freezing up, folks, so we're gonna see if she can come back. Naomi, if you can hear us, you're freezing up, I believe. I don't know, Abby, anything to add on that end?
Yeah, I can speak to some of what Naomi was saying. So some of the programs that they were touting in this response to us were things like the Solar for All program or Affordable Home Electrification, the Sustainable Energy Trust Fund. And these programs are all meant for helping people afford and access like this energy transition to electrification. And Mayor Bowser pretty much cut all of these programs. And so their response is not relevant. Like, it's undermined by this budget. And yeah, I'll toss it back to Naomi now that she's back to kind of like speak to what this means for like everyday DC residents, because I realize it can get really weedy, but it has like very direct impacts on each one of us.
Yeah, thanks for that. Lost my internet connection. I think to put this into terms that everyone can understand, the cuts that Mayor Bowser took to DC's energy and climate programs, it's going to, reduce DC's ability to leverage federal money for local programs. So we're going to be leaving federal dollars, millions of dollars on the table that could be serving DC residents. And it will mean fewer households get the opportunity to electrify and benefit from cleaner indoor air, therefore also cleaner outdoor air, and lower utility bills, because transitioning to all electric, and especially when you put solar on your house as well, can drastically lower monthly and annual utility bills, which is huge for people already struggling with the energy burden. And that energy burden is experienced very disproportionately across DC. And unfortunately, Mayor Bowser also cuts and is reworking where money is going. And so, to put it as simply as possible, DC ratepayers pay a certain amount of money into renewable energy and sustainable energy trust funds with their utility bills. Low-income households are exempt from having to pay this. And that money is meant to go into programs that will come back to serve them from sustainable energy. And Mayor Bowser is taking this money for the general fund. This is breaking trust with DC residents. Their money is not going where they were told it's going to go. And this is going to just erode confidence in the programs that DC could be running to serve its residents. And the last thing is that in her budget, Mayor Bowser also proposes changes to key building energy laws that will exempt the government from meeting certain standards and requirements that other buildings in DC are required to meet. And, you know, this is not walking the walk and could result in just the total unraveling of some of these laws in the future. So it's a scary future ahead for everyone.
Well, thank you for that. And there seems to be a theme with this darn budget where, you know, the things that we need in all aspects are either being cut or, you know, just very little attention. So, you know, I've been talking a little bit about this, but there does seem to be a change in values, right? Like the values reflected in these budget, in this forthcoming budget, you know, do not paint a pretty picture for the future, especially for low income residents of color in the district. It's going to make it very tough So we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on all of this and keep the fight going. I know you all have been engaging with council, and there is some council support. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this was a big effort by the Stop Project Pipes campaign to get council on board with the opposition to Project Pipes, because as Abby mentioned earlier, it is in direct contradiction to DC's climate laws and is a huge cost burden to DC residents. So after several conversations with council members, you know, educating them about this issue and asking them to take action, in February, 11 council members signed and sent a letter to the Public Service Commission, the decision maker around Project Pipe, opposing the next phase of Project Pipes, listing some of the reasons that we've discussed here today, especially its contradiction with climate laws and the enormous cost to ratepayers, and calling on the Public Service Commission to chart a different course for DC's energy future. And this was huge. I mean, having almost all of the council on board, including the chairman, sends a really strong message. We don't see letters like this go that frequently. And it's also important because the public service commissioners, they are not elected officials. They are appointed by the mayor. And so there's less opportunity for public engagement with them, and there's less accountability to DC residents. But as we know, the council members, they are elected, they are accountable to us. And it's important to move them towards taking action on this as well. So the council letter that went out was a really important first step in that direction. It sent a strong statement. The public service commissioners are more likely to listen to them than they are to listen to us, unfortunately. And we also don't want it to stop with a letter. It wasn't like sign, send, and we're done. We took action on Project Pipes. We want to see more decisive action by the council, you know, probably in the form of legislation at some point. And that's going to be hard because this decision is in the hands of the Public Service Commission. But there is more that council members can do to make sure that we have a future without Project Pipes, and that's equitably moving us off of the gas system. So we're waiting to see what goes next with them. But this was a really big step forward for us.
That's great. And yeah, I mean, budget season always slows some of these things down, but hopefully there's some more forward movement. Folks, you are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM. I am joined by, let me just make sure I get their titles correct. I know their names. Abby Shepherd, she's the press liaison with Extinction Rebellion DC, and Naomi Cohen Shields with DC Campaign. She's the DC Campaign Manager for the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893 to join the conversation. If you have any questions or any comments around the issue we are discussing. And Naomi, I'm always just curious, you know, you mentioned there's 11 council members supporting, and I believe there's more council members than that. Can you talk to us a little bit about why you think some of the other council members have not signed on or you know? Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I can speculate. Obviously, I don't know for sure. And we tried to engage every council office on this as the letter was going through. And I should have mentioned before also, this letter was led by Councilmember Allen, who's been a really vocal supporter for climate and climate justice in DC. And we're really thankful for his work on this. The two council members who didn't sign on were Councilmember Trayon White and Councilmember Kenyon McDuffie. Not 100% sure with Councilmember White. We have talked with his staff, and he has, for example, been supportive of the Healthy Homes Act that Abby mentioned earlier, which is helping low-income and moderate-income households in DC access full home retrofits towards electric appliances. We didn't hear anything against this letter from him or his staff. Might just not have been priority at the moment. I'm not sure more than that. With Councilmember McDuffie, he is the chair of the Committee on Business and Economic Development, and that committee oversees the Public Service Commission. And that I think could be one reason why he didn't sign on. Maybe felt like he had a responsibility not to, maybe felt uncomfortable with it. Maybe some other reasons there as well. Kind of speculation at this point. We didn't hear, you know, concrete reasons why not.
Thank you for that. You know, we've talked a lot about the issue. You know, methane is not good for people in general. It's not good to have it in our homes, in our environment in general. Can you talk to us about, you know, what the alternative is? I think we touched upon it a little bit, but, you know, where should we be going? What should this city be doing and investing in?
Yeah, I can start off and kick it to Abby for more. I think the big alternative out there to methane and to methane gas is electrification. So specifically, replacing gas grating appliances with electric appliances that ultimately will source their electricity from clean energy sources, renewable sources like solar, wind, and geothermal energy. And in this way, we will have appliances in our homes and buildings that aren't burning anything at the source, and they will come from energy sources that also aren't burning anything. And by doing that, we'll be creating cleaner air and reducing climate pollution. So this is the vision. And so much of the technology and the policy that could support this already exist. There are really efficient appliances out there, you know, heat pumps to heat your homes, electric boilers, induction stoves, that work really well and can actually maximize home comfort for a lot of people, and are healthier. And especially in places like DC, can reduce utility bills as well. So they great opportunities. And we know there have been studies that show that DC's electric grid can handle this transition. That's really important as well. And we have access to renewable energy sources and DC climate laws that say we have to continue to source more amount of our electricity from clean sources. So we're heading in this direction already, which is great, and which is why Project Pipes makes essentially no sense. I think, Abby, I don't know if there's more you want to add to that, but it feels like we're running towards this electric future already, and there's so much more support we can give it.
Yeah, and I'll add on to what Naomi said, and like the gist of that is methane is really an energy of the past. And the alternative fossil-free energy future that we envision is one that meets people's needs for health and safety and affordability. And it allows people, no matter where they are from or what they look like or what zip code they live in, allows them to thrive. And at Extinction Rebellion DC, we don't promote like specific policy solutions. Rather, we promote what's called citizens assemblies as the way to chart our path to this fossil-free future that we deserve. And citizens assemblies are something that do have to be organized by the government, but essentially they're a restoration of direct democracy that harnesses our collective power to direct where we want our community and our city to go. And as I mentioned, like at the very beginning of our conversation, our current political system is not working. It's, you know, a lot of organizations are pointing to how democracy is crumbling, but really, it never really truly existed. And it is answering to corporate interests, and also the way in which democracy is set up with, you know, politicians continuously needing to be reelected and having pretty short terms as they prioritize issues that are short term, so they can get these like short term wins in order to get reelected to stay in power. And citizens assemblies are a way of bringing more political power back to the citizens. And they're a form of deliberative democracy that calls together a representative sample of the community and requires them to learn and collaborate about a certain issue and then create some sort of recommendations for the government after learning about every side and angle of that issue. It really allows community to come together and face these really difficult issues like climate injustice head on and find a way to more concretely get to this fossil-free future. And when it comes to the energy transition, citizens' assemblies have such an important role to play, particularly in our current polarized political climate. Like even in DC, which is very much blue, there is still, you know, we still see polarization come up in different ways. And whether that's through Mayor Bowser's budget proposal and then like the actual needs of the city, kind of what we've been talking about throughout this conversation. And like I said, citizens' assemblies can technically only be organized by the government or the entity that they're the ones who can really pull together a representative sample because they have the data in order to do that. But what we can do and what XRDC is planning to do this year is organize a people's assembly. And so this would bring people together throughout DC to collectively envision what we would want in a livable fossil-free future. Like, what does it tangibly look like for people's needs to be met? And beyond just like getting methane out of our city, what are the other issues that are connected to this, like addressing food deserts or reliable, accessible transportation for people to get around the city? Or there's just so much that's connected to this issue. And we see this as like an opportunity to talk about that and be like, okay, if we're working on this campaign, like how can we also support each other in charting this path toward a livable future and then pushing our elected officials in this direction as well?
Thank you. Naomi, anything to add to that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm excited to see Extinction Rebellion pursue this People's Assembly. I think it's an exciting idea.
Yeah, no, thank you. Let's make sure, as you were saying, there are opportunities for folks to get involved, you know, district residents. You know, how can folks find out more about the issues, you know, any meetings, any events coming up? How can folks get involved in these efforts?
For Extinction Rebellion DC, there are several ways. First, if you're on social media, we're on some channels of social media. We're on Twitter/X at XR_DC, another underscore. And we're Extinction Rebellion DC on Instagram and Facebook. And there is where we post about actions and upcoming events. And you can also visit our website, xrdc.org. And there you can sign up for our email newsletter, which is a really thorough rundown of like current going on in DC, like some educational content about some climate issues or updates on our campaign. And then also upcoming events and ways to get involved for us, but also sharing like actions in which we're taking part in or supporting throughout this Stop Project Pipes coalition. And once you're on our newsletter, you'll be able to see a way to sign up for interest in being a part of our People's Assembly. We don't have a date set yet, but we do have a form you can fill out so that you'll be updated when we do have a date set. And if you're really interested in learning more about like who XRDC is and our philosophy and values, we have intro calls pretty frequently. So again, you can just go to our website and check out the events tab, and that will take you to upcoming events, including these intro calls.
Thank you for that. Naomi, how can folks get involved with your organization?
Yeah, we would love that. You can, probably the best way for learning more about our campaigns and what we've got going on is at our website. So that's www.xrdc.org. ccanactionfund.org /stopprojectpipes, or just find DC on the website. And you can also find us on social media at CCAN Action Fund on Twitter or Instagram. We are doing a lot of outreach this summer, so we invite folks to find us or join us at farmers markets or events across the city. I know that we'll be around the DuPont Circle Farmers Market this Sunday, or join a virtual meeting. We do a lot of our organizing and campaign strategizing over Zoom, and always welcome new faces and folks who want to learn more. The last thing I'll say is we are also building a kind of DC climate action team to bring new ideas and perspectives into our climate organizing work in DC. So if you are interested in that, you can, again, reach out to us from the website and would love to get in touch.
Wonderful. And as we begin to wrap up, I'm just wondering if there is any, you know, what are the next steps? Like what's going on in this work? I realize you've got some bigger, you know, like the People's Action event that you are having, but in general, you know, where does, how does the work keep moving? Anything coming up? Any, you know, we're looking at the budget, but that'll be kind of wrapped up soon. But you know, what else is next in this work?
Yeah, so two things I would note on that. Hopefully this one's wrapped up in the next 20 minutes, but wanted to note, as Abby mentioned earlier, right now the council is voting the final vote on the Healthy Homes Act, which will provide free home electrification for up to 30,000 low and moderate income households in DC. So hopefully they pass that in the next hour or so, which is really exciting, but the work for that doesn't stop there. Like you mentioned, that the funding that was dedicated for that legislation and the program that would be implemented was cut in the budget. And so we will be fighting for restoration of that funding or partial restoration, whatever we can get over the next month. And then thinking about how we implement this, how we get the word out to communities across DC and households to take advantage of the programs that are out there. And I think that's a critical part of building the movement. And the other thing is, in terms of timing, we have at least until February 2025 now, until the PSC has to decide on the next phase of Project Pipes. And we will continue building momentum and organizing towards a non-Project Pipes future until then. So no dates on the calendar yet for next big actions, but you can expect that we'll be ramping up, mobilizing throughout the summer and the fall.
Awesome. Thank you, Abby.
Yeah, super appreciating what Naomi has shared and echoing the, yeah, Project Pipes is at least until February. So we at least know we have until then to really ramp up this pressure. And I know from XRDC that, you know, we still have these demands for the mayor, as I talked about earlier, that have not been fulfilled. And so that is still on our radar and will be part of upcoming actions. I also want to name that we do have demands for the DC Council. That is how we started our portion of this End Methane campaign 2 years ago, was three demands for the DC Council around naming Project Pipes is in opposition to DC's climate goals and urging the Public Service Commission to reject Project Pipes, and then also working to immediately enact this just transition. And because of this letter that the 11 DC council members sent to the Public Service Commission, as Naomi talked about earlier, nearly two out of three of those demands are met. I say nearly because it wasn't the full council. It was only 11 out of the 13. And just want to emphasize that, you know, they still have work to do. And we appreciate that there are council members that stepped up to publicly name and urge the Public Service Commission to really consider this issue. But there's definitely work to do. And then the second thing I really want to mention and acknowledge is, and something XRDC has been thinking a lot about is, you know, it's this federal election year. And we don't know how the presidential election is going to turn out. But often in these election years, while we're focused on this local campaign, whatever happens at the federal level, especially being in the nation's capital directly, is going to impact us and our ability to get climate action done or get these other, you know, enacting this just transition done in DC, especially with, you know, us not having statehood and having to go to Congress for certain approvals with our legislation. And that can be a lot. It can be overwhelming, and these issues can be really overwhelming. And another reason we're really organizing this People's Assembly is because XRDC believes in the power of community, and that the way to weather the storms and the obstacles, whether it's a tight budget season or it's a contentious presidential election, is by leaning onto the community that we're creating through organizing. And we do that inside of our own organization, but really we want to do that with other local organizations and residents throughout the city, because that is how we form like this strong collective. And when we come together, really the many can defeat the money that Washington Gas has and the fossil fuel industry has and other corporations have. So yeah, just really wanted to leave folks with that note of hope that, like, together we really do have power to enact these changes. And every day that I get to work with these organizers and chat with people really gives me hope for that, even amidst all that is going on in our world.
Well, I want to thank you both for the great work that you're doing. Thank you for coming on the show this afternoon to really, you know, let our listeners know about this important issue and how they can get involved. Just right before we wrap up, if each of you would please just give us your social media for your organization, just real quick, so folks can find out more.
Yeah. So you can find Chesapeake Climate Action Network on social media, either at CCAN Action Fund or at Chesapeake Climate.
And for Extinction Rebellion DC, you can find us on Twitter at @XR_DC_, and on Instagram and Facebook, we're just Extinction Rebellion DC.
Awesome. Well, I want to say once again, thank you so much for coming on. And we look forward to having you on in the future with some updates and, you know, hopefully some good news on the campaign moving forward.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. It was great.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
Take care.
Folks, as we wrap up here, I wanted to save a couple of minutes here at the end to talk about in the budget and some work that we're doing here with folks at Empower DC. And it speaks to what the conversation we were just having, right? Like the costs of just everything is going up. As Abby and Naomi shared with us, you know, a lot of the, you know, in order to pay for a project like Project Pipes, the burden falls on DC residents. And what we're seeing reflected in this budget is something, you know, as I mentioned, a change in values where projects and programs that people need in this city are being cut. And one of them that we are looking at, because the mayor is looking at cutting the funding for it, is the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. If folks have not heard of the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, often referred to as ERAP, it is a program that folks who are rent burdened can apply to get help paying the arrearages that they have in rent and to avoid eviction. And in this city, you know, often eviction can lead to homelessness because finding a home, an affordable home. And, you know, affordable is a misnomer now. You know, it becomes very difficult. So that program had been funded at least for this fiscal year at a rate of $43 million. Then the Councilmember White's office, along with other council members, were able to find an extra $20 million to supplement this much needed program. So at a rate of at a higher rate of 63, which is, you know, really needed. There are so many people who are behind on their rent because there are so many other pressures, right? There's just food, you know, utilities, you know, your medical costs. So what we're seeing, we're very concerned here, not only us, but many other organizations are very concerned about the cut to the emergency rental assistance program. The mayor wants to fund it at only $20 million. You know, she's also has a very disturbing narrative that people are gaming this program, that people have gotten used to not paying their rent and are looking to the government to bail them out and to pay their rents. We've not seen any real proof, at least on a wide scale, that that is happening. What we do know is that, you know, the rent is too darn high and everything else is high. So we are really pushing the city council, and there is some support to fund the emergency rental assistance program at a higher rate through our work with the Fair Budget Coalition. We are asking it to be funded at $100 million. Not sure if that will be funded at that level. We hope so, but we certainly can't let it fall below the funding at the rate that it was for this year. Otherwise, what we're going to see is, you know, more evictions and potentially more people experiencing homelessness in one way or another. So I'm making a request out here to folks. If you have we want to really push back against this narrative that the program is being gamed and that, you know, they need to cut the funding and so on and so forth. So we are looking for people who have applied, have, you know, received funding and have avoided eviction and ending up on the streets. We really want to make sure that we can tell the city council, that we can tell the mayor, like, wait a second, this program does help, and we need to make sure that it's funded. So if you have that experience, if you've applied to ERAP, if it's helped you stay in your home, please feel free to give us a call and share your story. We'd love to hear it. We'd love to help amplify it. It can be anonymous. We're also looking for, you know, in general, folks that can help us push back against this narrative. So please reach out to us. You can reach out to me. My email is daniel@empowerdc.org. That's daniel@empowerdc.org. You can also give me a call at 202-731-8634. Once again, that's 202-731-8634. In general, really encouraging folks to keep an eye on their budget, on the budget rather, and make sure that we're advocating against some of these really severe cuts that we're seeing that are really not going to help district residents, especially low-income residents of the district. So with that, I'll say thank you. Stay tuned for COVID, Race, and Democracy. But before that, the news. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We will catch you next Tuesday.
Hi, this is Robin Holden.
Hi, this is Miyuki Williams.
WPFW programmers Miyuki Williams, Robin Holden, Craig Williams, Jim Byers, Verna Avery Brown, James Funk, Captain Fly, Tom Cole, Bill Wax, Kim Bay, Joni Eisenberg, Arthur McLeod, Donald Temple, Bill Starr, Lona Elias, Ron Pinchback, David Whetstone, DJ Abby, DJ Divine, and Willard Jenkins. will celebrate you at Washington's premier jazz club, Tacoma Station, 6914 4th Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. This is a musical tribute on Sunday, May 26, from 5 until 9 p.m.
This event features internationally renowned bassist Michael Bowie, Hope Udobie on keyboards, Charles Wilson drums, Grace J and Sing Steph on vocals, and others.
Please come and join your favorite programmers for some great jazz, food, cocktails, and a little dancing for a Sunday jazz happy hour you will never forget.
The event happens at the Tacoma Station Jazz Club, 6914 4th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., a musical fundraising tribute, Sunday, May 26, 5 until 9 p.m. The tickets are $50, and there are only 100 tickets for this VIP event. Secure your tickets to the Jazz Happy Hour.
Tickets are available at Eventbrite. When in Eventbrite, please search WPFW Tacoma Station. We're looking forward to celebrating you on Sunday, May 26th from 5 until 9 p.m. at Tacoma Station.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. The Biden administration is delaying shipments of ammunition that were expected to be sent to Israel in view of America trying to pressure Israel to hold off on a full-scale invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza until it has a plan to protect the 1 million civilians who are now living there. Despite Hamas accepting a ceasefire proposal yesterday, Israel failed to do the same. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, says that the ceasefire proposal falls far short of Israel's demands, but a delegation has arrived in Cairo, Egypt, for further talks. Meanwhile, Israeli tanks controlled Gaza's Rafah border crossing earlier this morning, and Palestinians there say that they are trapped as a result. Experts are warning the public about the latest COVID-19 variants that may lead to a summer surge. These variants are like a pair of siblings, KP2 and KP1.1. They're known as the flirt variants. The name flirt isn't random. It's actually based on the technical names for their mutations. The flirt variants have descended from a spinoff of JN1, which was the most common variant in the United States until last week. Now, KP2, one of the flirt variants, is the most dominant variant in the United States. According to the CDC, KP2 makes up nearly 25% of COVID cases in the U.S., and it's been quickly increasing in cases over the past few weeks. As of now, doctors say there's nothing to suggest that the flirt variants are any more concerning to the general population than other recent COVID variants. But there is data to suggest that the COVID vaccine might not be as effective as it's been against other strains. With regard to the most common symptoms for COVID-19, the CDC says they still include fever or chills, cough, shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, congestion or runny nose, and sore throat. To your local news, in New York, adult film actress Stormy Daniels, a central figure in Donald Trump's hush money case, took the stand to testify today. According to prosecutors, Daniels was paid $130,000 to keep from going public before the 2016 election about her alleged affair with Donald Trump from years before. On the stand, Daniels was questioned about the affair and how the hush money payment from Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, was negotiated. The payments that Trump made to Cohen are at the heart of the 34 charges of falsifying business records against Trump, which he has pleaded not guilty to. The former president has also denied the affair with Stormy Daniels. To the D.C. area, drivers in the district know that speeding in the city through an area with a camera will lead to an unwanted gift in the mail, namely a speeding ticket. Interestingly, the D.C. council has received a detailed update on which speed cameras in the city are taking the most pictures. The District Department of Transportation, or DDOT, said the busiest speed camera in the entire city is one of the newest ones. It's located along the northbound Potomac Freeway at 25th Street in Northwest. From October 1st to December 31st, 2023, this camera alone issued 33,682 tickets. That's the most citations ever given out by any DC automaker.